5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Crowd Control Warden Sachs. Ethan, we were just talking about how you were doing crowd control duty on Jonah, trying to keep him all over the place. Moving now.
That's one of your best intros yet. I loved it. That was right off the top. We were literally just talking about that right before clicking record. Yeah, he's a very confident walker. Like, his confidence is through the roof. His walking abilities, there's some room for improvement there for sure. But he's not deterred by many things, and so I'm trying to be a bit of a deterrent to him going up and grabbing various water bottles or hair of other children.
So he could block warriors is what you're saying?
Yes, he's not a coward. Not a coward, confirmed. How are you doing, buddy? How's your week? We recorded midweek last week, so it's been like 10 days since I got to talk to you.
Good. It's been a lot of band, as per usual, you know. But now I'm going to be less busy. So we just had a middle school concert band contest on Friday. So I had a bunch of after-school rehearsals for that this week. Hadn't played a ton of Magic till Saturday. Did a couple drafts, a few drafts sprinkled in here and there when I had a chance, but wasn't feeling up to streaming, so just was doing piddly things on my phone or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I got savaged by you because I made Mythic. I showed you that I was Mythic and Constructed and like Bronze and Limited for the first time. Like,
I was embarrassed.
You know, a combo of prepping for Arena Champ, so playing Explorer, which is all, you know, playing on Best of Three Ladder is ranked, and then I've only been playing Best of Three Limited and mostly on MTGO to prep for the PT and still to prep for Arena Champs. But I'm now, I have a higher rank than you in Limited now.
I'm off the best of one life. I've been playing best of three.
It just feels, I know we always say this, but like, it feels so different.
It really does. It's just
feel so different.
Yeah, that's what I think. Like, not even the drafts. I don't even care about the drafting portion so much. The games feel artificial. Everyone takes turns playing a thing, but like mash into each other until somebody plays a card that's way better than all the other cards that have been played. That's how best of one games feel to me.
Well, I also feel so much less incentivized to like scrap. Like, in best of three, I'm always like, okay, well, I want to play some more turns because maybe this could happen. Or like, I want to see more of your deck so I can figure out what I'm going to do in game two. But like, if you slam some impactful thing on turn four or five, I'm always just like, all right, whatever, on to the next. Like, I don't feel the impulse there to like really eke out that whatever 5 or 10%.
Well, and that happens to me more in the draft when I'm drafting in best of one. I feel so much less incentivized to like try some cool creative offbeat strategy because I just feel like I'm going to get smashed by people where red white was open in their pod or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, happy to hear you're on the best of three life. Yeah. I do think I'm going to try. I say this now, but my feeling is I'm going to be, I really enjoyed playing on MTGO and I really enjoyed the single limb Phantom Qs. And
when you're going back to boomer status,
at least for the start of the format next time, because those fired, at least because people were like prepping for the Pro Tour. And so I can't imagine those fired that much anymore. But in those first few weeks, they were popping off and they're fun. They're fun to do. It feels like there's some stakes there. I like the stakes.
I agree. That's the magic for stakes right now is what I'm jonesing for sure.
All right, let's get into this episode here. We've got a really sweet idea, sort of new twist. Ben came up with a really awesome way for us to sort of do a not quite commons in context, but sort of like a draft drop-in. Like we always talk, we focus so much on the first few picks, right? A lot of the time, pick orders, tier lists, we talk about card X versus card Y, but context matters so much. And so we're going to just sort of like a blind drop into a bunch of drafts, be like, okay, this was what pack one was. What's coming up? What's the plan for packs two and pack three? You know, where's your head at?
Yeah, because I think that's something people really struggle with. And I don't think there's much content out there about it. Like we spend a ton of time talking about, would you take this or this or this?
Yes.
In this exact spot, but not about like how to formulate, oh, okay, I have this collection of cards. Like how do my pick orders change from here and why? What routes do I still have available Correct. Through the draft? And how should I weight those different routes appropriately? All that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So I'm excited to get into that. First things first, let's chat about the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to get back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, but we have a lot of great perks over via the Patreon. And I can't believe it, but new set season is just around the corner. And spoilers, previews, first few days of a new format is a great time to be in on Lords Limited Discord, which is what everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to. Hopping, popping. 24/7 limited tech support. Can't say enough good things about the Discord. And there's some great perks as well as you move up the reward tier rankings, getting access to the show notes, getting access to the show a day early ad free, and even access to monthly coaching sessions with me or Ben. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And of course, we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they joined. So this week we're welcoming Malcolm, Valentin, John, Michael, Raphael, Josh, and Kevin. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. And that takes us straight into our new segment, the JLK What's the Play? Thank you very much to Josh Lee Kwai for getting us started on this.
I have a task for you, Ben. Can you write us a little jingle for this? It's like the JLK What's the Play? Like something like that. Can you?
You've already got it down.
That's just brainstorming. I need the masters of clarinet over there to come in clutch here.
This is a serious request. Give me summer. Be a summer project.
Okay,
an unmusical segment for a couple months.
Big project. This is going to be Ben's magma opus over there. Okay, so I drafted a deck that we may get to the first eight picks a little later. I have this. This is one of the scrappier drafts I had recently, but it actually ended up going okay. But this is a what's the play from me. So here's the board state. We're smack dab in the middle of a game here on the best of one cues with a red-black deck splashing a bit of white for Aurelia's Vindicator that's actually in our hand. That's a 2WW 4/2 flying lifelink ward 2, but has disguise for X 3W. And when it's turned face up, you exile up to X other target creatures from the battlefield and or creature cards from graveyards. And then when Vindicator leaves the battlefield, you return the exiled cards to their owner's hand. So we're on turn 4 here, and the board state is as such. You have Swamp Swamp, Mountain Mountain, and a Goblin Mask Maker. That's how good this draft went. A Goblin Mask Maker in play, the red 1/2 that makes your disguise creatures cheaper if it attacks. Your opponent has cast a disguise creature last turn, so they've tapped Mountain Forest and Branch of V2 Ghazi, leaving one mountain untapped. And they just have that one lone disguise creature in play. Life total is still pretty high. They're at 18, you're at 20. And you have the following cards in your hand as options. You have a Galvanize, 2 mana, deal 3, or if you've drawn a second card, deals 5 instead. Extracted Confession, the Edict removal spell. And you do actually have evidence to collect. You have a Shock and a Shady Informant in the bin. So you have exactly 6 in the yard to be able to nab something with high power later on if you wanted to, or to nab this creature right now. And you have 2 disguised creatures, Aurelia's Vindicator in hand, as well as Gadget Technician, the 2BR 3/2, that when it ETBs or is turned face up for is it hybrid, you get a 1/1 Thopter artifact creature token with flying. So the options as I see it are galvanize, use your whole mana, all 4 mana to galvanize the disguised creature, just get it out of the way. You could extract it, I guess, and then hold up Galvanize for something else. You could extract, attack with Mask Maker, play one of your disguised creatures, right? Because it'll be cheaper. Or I guess you could chump attack with the Mask Maker. Maybe they don't block because they think you have a trick. And then if they don't block, you get to deploy two disguise creatures, right? For two mana each using your four mana. Those seem to be the options. Like, one, you can either kill the thing with the edict and hold up a way to kill something else, or kill a thing, play a creature, or play two creatures. You really have like a lot of options at your disposal with this hand.
Yeah, there's a lot of permutations for sure. One of the other options is to just play a disguise creature and pass.
Sure, like, yeah.
To me, like when I looked in on this initially, to me, this looks like a mana efficiency puzzle. Like,
correct.
Because our hand is kind of awkward in that, like, we don't really need to kill this morph, but if it worked out to do it in a mana efficient way, like, that'd be fine. I don't love spending your whole turn galvanizing the morph, because then, like, your opponent just plays another card the next turn, you're going to have the same issue where you have an awkward mana consideration the following turn, unless you rip a land off the top. Like, the only way we're getting out of this mana jam that we're in mm-hmm. is ripping a fifth land the following turn. So the option I like the best is, I think the best mana efficient scenario that I can construct from this hand is if we attack with Goblin Maskmaker, they don't block, and we get to play two morphs. Like, we get significantly far ahead there. If we get the Aurelia's Vindicator down and the Goblin Technician down, you're exposing Vindicator to removal a little bit, but like, to really get the full value of that card, you're probably going to have to expose it to removal at some point. And they're still 50-50 because you just put down two morphs to try to decide which one to kill. And then if they block with their morph, you can galvanize it and not lose your Goblin Maskmaker, which is fine. You also could just use the Maskmaker as a ritual here,
yeah.
too, which I don't hate if they do decide to block. But I think you definitely have to attack with the Maskmaker to alleviate like how awkward your curve is right now. Like, every permutation you want to do is a 3+2, mm-hmm. and you only have four mana, and the Maskmaker gets rid of the choking point on that to let you actually have a mana efficient turn somehow, some way. But I think no matter what that looks like, and some of it's in your opponent's hands, so you'll have to react to what they choose to do, but all of it involves attacking with Maskmaker.
Yeah, I was so like, so the line that I ended up taking was galvanize the disguise. I was like, this uses all my mana this turn, get something off the board, assuming that all they do next turn is play one threat, I can edict and then attack with Maskmaker and play a disguise creature. I'm embarrassed to say I didn't even consider the chump attack Maskmaker to just deploy two disguise creatures this turn. And I love that play.
Yeah, why wait till next turn when you can do it this turn, baby?
And I think you're totally right. Like, I think if I'm choosing to attack, I don't think I galvanize if they decide to block. I think I go, cool, you like one, I mean, they might call Maskmaker, but like, I could have +3/+0 first
strike. I think they're likely to not. If my opponent attacks with Maskmaker there, I think most of the time I am not blocking.
Right, and you're at 18, like, you just go, okay, cool. You get it. And then you still have the Maskmaker, and you are so ahead on mana by playing two disguise creatures this turn.
Well, and then also the following turn, then you have two removal spells lined up to like put the pressure on,
right.
or flip the technician. Play extract, like, to get their best creature. I just think it sets you up so well for the following turn.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. This is the beauty of the What's the Play segment is I can get surprised. I can learn something as well as our dear listeners. Even though it's March, are we still allowed to talk about New Year's resolutions?
Yours are still intact? I'm impressed.
Well, not exactly. I had some lofty fitness goals at the start of the year that I have yet to make good on. Turns out chasing around a 14-month-old doesn't exactly count as exercise.
Apparently neither does wrangling a classroom full of middle schoolers.
One thing that does count towards my goals is Magic Spoon, a delicious cereal that is low on sugar and packed with protein.
The Magic Spoon Variety Pack comes with four flavors, cocoa, fruit, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of net carbs, and only 140 calories per serving.
Magic Spoon slots into a ton of different parts of my day. Could be a quick, wholesome breakfast, an afternoon snack when I need some extra fuel, or a nice way to end the day to satisfy my sweet tooth without all the sugar.
Go to magicspoon.com/LOL to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code LOL at checkout to save $5 off your order.
And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember, start the new year off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/LOL and use the code LOL to save $5 off. Thanks to Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode.
All right, Ben, let's get into some of these scenarios, these draft drop-ins, investigating draft options, whatever you want to call them. Anything we want to chat about before diving in, or we'll just go to the first one and see where it takes us?
Well, I think for the listener,
yeah,
just to try to keep an open mind about, like, I think my instinct as a drafter, or as a listener, your instinct as a drafter might be, well, but what was in the pack with that card? But wait. I need to know more about this. But that's not the point of this exercise. The point of the exercise is to get you thinking about stuff other than that, like just your broad overarching plan for the draft, or how, like, given this collection of cards, you have these eight cards, how are you starting to make shifts in your pick order and why? Or which colors do you want to steer towards and why? So just a bigger, broader look at it. So to try to not, like, to fight that instinct of, but wait, I need to know more. That would be the one caveat I would want to put before we dive in.
I think it's a good caveat, because I also had, you know, looking at some of these, because all we have in the show notes is what the first eight picks were for these different spots. And you're certainly always, you're like, wow, you took this fifth. Well, I wonder what else was in the pack. It's like, no, that's not the point. As Ben said, we're really just trying to, like, it's like you just got dropped in. You woke up and these eight picks were in front of you, and you have to navigate the rest of the draft. So it doesn't matter what was in those packs.
You disconnected, and this is what the arena gods gave you when you logged back in.
They mostly did a nice job here.
They did great.
Scenarios.
The auto picker did great. So scenario one here, we're just going to take you through the cards in order, maybe like some quick comments in between the cards, and then kind of get to talking about the scenario. So your pack one, pick one, Tolsimir, Midnight's Light. That's the green, white rare. That's 3/2 lifelink that brings a 5/5 wolf along with it. Bomb of the highest order. Pick two, Case of the Gateway Express. That's the saga that deals damage equal to the number of creatures you control.
It's a case. It's not a saga.
It's a saga.
It's not a saga.
Every time I see these, I think they are sagas. I call them sagas in my head. It's a saga.
Okay.
It looks like a saga, walks like a saga, talks like a saga. It's a saga. But yes, it is a case. Thank you for the clarification. Deals damage equal to the number of creatures you control. And then if you attacked with three or more creatures in a turn, you flip it to give your team +1/+0. Things are going well. Still on track to draft green-white. Pick three, Dog Walker, to go along with your white cards. Great. Pick four, Inside Source, the 1/1 plus the 2/2. Draft is going super smooth. You're on easy street here to still draft green-white. Pick five, things dropping off a little bit. You take a Seasoned Consultant here. That's the 1/3 that gets +2/+0 if you attacked with two other creatures. And then pick six, Projector Inspector. Bit of a left turn here. So two and a blue for the 3/2. A good left turn, though. I love Projector Inspector so much. When it ETBs or another detective, you get a loot. Pick seven. We're getting back on track here a little bit with an Auspicious Arrival. One and a white for the +2/+2 and investigate. And then following it up with a pick eight, Cold Case Cracker. That's the 3 and a blue, 3/3 flyer that when it dies, you also investigate.
This is a great start to a draft. Like, it's so interesting that you kept saying, so there are a bunch of different, like, checklists or like questions that I want to ask myself. And I tell people, like, when I do coaching sessions, like, you want to take a pause at the end of pack one, beginning of pack two, to check in and be like, okay, where am I at color wise, like direction wise, game plan wise? And so for this, you kept saying on track to draft green white. I'm not even thinking that. I'm just like, I know I'm white for sure. Would I like to play this Tolsimir? Yes. How does that happen? Well, either we end up in green-white, or we end up white X and pick up some fixing for it, which is reasonable to do. Like, especially with how good the quality of our cards are, how, like, it's possible all eight of these cards make our deck at the end of this draft. And if we're blue-white splashing Tolsimir, and that's great. And then I can afford to take an escape tunnel or two as the draft goes on to make sure I can cast this Tolsimir. But I'm just feeling like kind of on easy street a little bit. Like, it feels like I'm going to get to draft white. Like, it didn't feel like it dried up. Like, it certainly dried up a little bit towards the end of the pack, but that's fine. And maybe blue presented itself with the projector inspector. Maybe not, though, because as we've noted, like, that card just seems kind of underrated, kind of goes later than it should.
It's impossible to me. It is one of my favorite cards in the set.
It's so good. I don't
understand it.
It's so good. Yeah. But I'm not putting like a lot of weight on that. It doesn't feel like getting, I don't know, a shock pick six. That would feel like, whoa, I guess red is either there was a ton of red in this pack or red is wide open.
Oh, it feels that way to me about blue.
But that's only because you have the weight for the card that I think is correct. But I wouldn't guarantee that the other seven people at your table do. Anyway, it's getting into the weeds a little bit. But I think like this just feels like you're going to get to draft a white assertive deck. You want more, like I'm looking for more cheap things. I'm looking for more go wide payoffs, and I'm still open for a second color. You know, if I open a hunted bone brute in a pack where there's like not a ton of other options in white, I'm going to take that and I could go black white and think about splashing Tolsimir, you know, like feel very open at this point. I don't have to lock in to a second color just yet.
Sure. Yeah, I think absolutely. So of these two paths, so right now we're on track to, we know we're white. I think that's true. White. I agree with that. Of leaning towards white, green, and white, blue from here. Like you had your pack one, pick one green card. You've taken no other green cards through the first eight picks. And you have these two blue cards, one of which we really like in Projector Inspector. Which way, given a choice, like let's say you've got a pack with a good blue card and a good green card. Where are you leaning right now of the two paths?
Blue. I would lean blue personally. Like again, not knowing any of the context of the pack, but like you had an incentive to take a green card over a blue card in the spots where you took blue cards, right? So if there was a green card worth taking when you took Projector Inspector or a green card worth taking when you took Cold Case Cracker, you would have done so, I think, because you have Tolsimir. That should be a bit of a tiebreaker for you. That should be some weight. So I'm assuming that green is not super open at this table. And I feel like it's still easy. I don't have to give up on the Tolsimir dream. I just can't give up on green being my secondary color. So I would say given the choice, blue, white.
Yeah, I think that's where I lean too. What about shifting pick orders here? Like we definitely need, I guess you don't need removal. You have Case of the Gateway Express. You have a removal spell. So, like, of the white cards, are you still kind of in order right now for Novice Inspector 1, Binding 2, Inside Source 3? Like, has your pick order changed there at all, given these picks?
No, not yet. I mean, I will say it's interesting. I feel like this is now the second week in a row where you've kind of, I feel like Seasoned Consultant in your mind is kind of like a whatever card. Is that true?
It's not. Yeah, it is in my mind and it keeps killing me.
It's so good.
It's better than I think it is. Yeah. It keeps killing me and I keep getting annoyed that it's killing me.
Right. Well, and it's just part of the like two drops are premium in this format thing. Like the good ones, at least, and Seasoned Consultant, I think is a good one, especially if you end up in blue white because it's got types, right? It is a detective. So it's going to trigger your Projector Inspector, your Inside Source can pump it, whatever. And when you have cards like Case of the Gateway Express, you know, I assume we'll talk about on the job fitting in here and it's going to fit in extremely well. But to make those cards better, you need your curve to start lower. Like ideally you can go two drop, three drop, double spell with Case of the Gateway Express and a two drop on turn four. You know, that's how that card's going to be at its best. So I am thinking already about like probably the cards I can think of in white that go up for me, like Seasoned Consultant probably is starting to like go up in my white pick order. I don't know where, like, I could definitely see spots. I don't know. Maybe I want to say this, but I could see spots where, like, if we end up with a couple more pieces of interaction, where Seasoned Consultant gets taken over, maybe Makeshift Binding. Like, if I'm just like, I need my curve up, I need my creature count up, let's get Seasoned Consultant in there.
Where is On the Job on that list for you? Like, how aggressively are you picking it at this point with already having a Dog Walker and an Inside Source?
It's up there. I don't think it's not, I'm not taking it ahead of those three that you said. I'm not taking it ahead of Inspector, Binding, or Inside Source at the moment. I will be really sad if I end the draft and I don't have one copy of On the Job. And so it'll be interesting to know where I have to pick that. There's also an interesting wrinkle thinking about being exactly white-blue. Like if we think we're whatever, 60% to end up white blue at this point, just throwing out a random number. Like out cold is not the same as on the job, but it occupies such a similar space of like big, impactful 4-mana tempo swing that also gives you a clue that like, I'm going to get one of those. I could definitely, like, it's going to be really hard to imagine the draft going away where I end up white blue and don't end up with a copy of one of those. And I'm not sure I care that much. Like if I'm super go wide, right? If I've got a ton of dog walkers and inside sources, sure, I'll prefer to have on the job. But otherwise, I'll be happy with out cold as well. And so it's interesting to think about, like, I don't know if I need to bump up on the job thinking about being blue white specifically.
Okay, so different train of thought here for this scenario. We know we're white. We're trying to decide between green, white, and blue, white at the moment, like without any other information, you know, for the draft. Let's say early on in pack two, like maybe even pack two, pick one. Like let's say you open up a bad pack and you're trying to decide between a green card or a white card. Like what's the type of hit in power level you're willing to take to get to delay the decision for whether to take a green card versus a white card? Because if you take a green card and then a blue white, you're wasting a pick, right?
Yeah.
So let's say something like the Loxodon, the 3/3 that makes a clue versus, I don't know, on the job. Are you taking on the job there, pack two, pick one to stay, like to solidify into white? Are you taking seasoned consultant over that? For sure, right? Because you want twos.
Right. Well, I don't think that's a for sure. That I think that seems like, because eavesdropper versus seasoned consultant, pack like in our vacuum pick orders, it's clearly eavesdropper.
Yes, 100% of the time.
But if with this pile, I see that choice, pack two, pick one, I'm taking seasoned consultant, easy peasy. Because one, like I already have a sense of what I want, like what holes I'm going to need to fill in my deck. I already know I'm white. And so I know I'm going to put this card in my deck 100% of the time at the end of the draft. And we already talked about like, I don't know, like, I feel like I would take a pretty significant hit in power level to stay white.
So what's like, the line? Like Market Watch Phantom? Are you taking that? Like the 2/2 that, yes, that gains flying when, yep, you play another power 2 or less?
It's not fair because white's commons are so good. I don't think I'm taking a green common over. Like, I don't think I'm taking a green common pack 2, pick 1. But like, there's many green, not like Green Belt Radical. That's a I'd be like, oh, okay. Maybe I take that over something like that. Feels like something that's significantly powerful enough to take and then start to push me towards green. But the it's like, if I take a green card, man, this is so interesting. This is hilarious. I said we have like 7 of these in our show notes and I was like, maybe, I don't know, we'll probably get to all of them. Like there's just too much to talk about. But the thing about taking a green card, any green card, even something like Green Belt Radical, pack 2, pick 1, is that it puts a like stranglehold on your decision-making process.
Right. Like, on your options.
Like, right. You're going to have to decide if you're green, white or blue, white, or I guess if you're green, white or not by like pick 3. Whereas if you take a white card, you don't have to decide. Like you could probably not decide depending on how many white cards you took in pack 2 until pack 3.
Well, and here's the other issue with it. I think this is the more important thing. Is that you're making the decision, or you're starting to make the decision with less information. Like you're making a less informed decision, like the earlier you take the green card. Because you're just like taking the card on power level without really seeing the signals. Whereas if you make some hits in power and you take a couple white cards and take hits in power level, then all of a sudden you see a really good green card or a really good blue card, then it's more signal-esque and you're making the decision for better reasons. To figure out which color. That's the reason to delay in my mind.
The flip side of that is that you don't want to, like I gave Bone Brute as an example, but whatever sort of, if you don't think Bone Brute is that good or you're not jazzed about drafting black, white, whatever, like that's fine. But if you do open something powerful that isn't blue or green, like let's say you got the Incinerator Dragon, the 6/6.
Yeah.
Like, you take that and that
100%.
And now that has a lot of weight. And now I'm thinking, can I be white red and still maybe splash this Tolsimir or whatever? But like, I think we talk about delay the decision a lot. I think people lean into that too much sometimes. Like the reverse is that you lean into it too much. You keep yourself open and pass up on power. And at a certain point, I think to myself when I see drafts like that, like, what are you delaying the decision for, if not
incinerator
on something as powerful as this? And it doesn't have to be that clear of a pick or whatever. You know, it could be the massacre girl, 4/4 menace, black, you know, something like that. That's like, that's really powerful. But you're like, oh, do I want to draft black white, or it's double pipped, you know, things like that. It's just like, if you're not going to take something like that and then try and go down that path and open up that path for you, what are you waiting for?
Right. So, and again, that's like balancing the scales. On one hand, you're trying to give weight to flexibility and power in making choices in the draft versus just the raw power level of a card and trying as hard as possible to get that card in your deck. And it's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah.
Scenario one down, 20 minutes in. Easy. But I think that's what I wanted to do with these is just like, I think a lot of people don't think about big picture stuff like this. And this is at one point in the draft. This is with 8 picks. Like, you and I, when we're drafting, are thinking about these things every single pick. I mean, we're focusing on the individual draft pick too, but there's also an overarching thing. And we get questions in the Discord all the time where I'm like, how did this happen? Like, do you know what I mean?
Like, it's one of the reasons I stopped like, I just don't do deck techs on stream really anymore because they're just not like, it's not really solving the problem. Like, so many of the times when, like, it's so rare that a deck tech is truly like, what are my final 21 through 23 playables? Like, it's so often like, how did we get here? Like, something went wrong in the draft for us to be in this predicament in the first place. And so me telling you which of these bad cards to play isn't actually, it's like that, the meme where someone's like slapping a piece of tape on that leaking like water tank, you know, like that's what it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. You're bleeding out and trying to put a Band-Aid on it.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Go for a run?
Read a book?
Take a nap?
Fire up a draft?
Fire up 2 drafts?
Even better. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters so you can do more of it. So time is something I'm always short on as a band teacher, and I have recently started dating someone the past 5 or 6 months, and that's been another thing that's very important to me that I've been conscious about making time for, and just knowing how and what to prioritize in my life has become even more important, and I feel like that's something that I've had to make some hard choices about.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show.
All right, that was a nice clean draft. I'm going to skip ahead here to scenario 5 in our show notes, because this is a real messy one. So speaking of that dragon, this is what you start off with. Pack 1, pick 1, Incinerator of the Guilty. It's the 4 red, 6/6, flying trample. Deals damage to a player you can collect evidence X, and if you do, deal X damage to each of the creatures that player controls. Pick 2, an inside source, nice white common. Pick 3, Long Goodbye, black removal spell. I know everyone's already thinking, but what was in the packs?
I know. It's
just
so hard.
Just trust me. So we take a Long Goodbye, pick 3. We take a Gravestone Strider, pick 4, the colorless 1/3 that can filter mana and exile something from a yard if it's in your graveyard. A Crawl Whipcracker, pick 5, the black green 3/2 reach. When it ETBs, you can destroy a token. An Undercover Crocodelf, pick 6. Green removal spell, Bite Down on Crime, pick 7, and a V2 Ghazi Inspector, pick 8. The 1 and a green, 1/3 with reach. Collect evidence 6. If you do, put a counter on something and gain 2 life.
This is a draft.
This is an Ethan Sachs special right here.
So, I don't know. Looking at this, just like the assortment of cards we have, so you can try to visualize at home, dear listeners. We've got red card, white card, black card, 3 green cards, essentially, in V2 Ghazi Inspector, Bite Down on Crime, and the Crocodile. Like, Crocodile is just a green card in my head. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, I've been very unhappy with the more expensive morphs, not able to cast them for both their colors. So I don't think I would play Crocodile unless I were green, blue, or really needed to get collect evidence six in the yard. Like that, yeah. I would just be super aggressively trying to trade it off in a green deck. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the Whipcracker as a black green card, and then Gravestone, Strider, just tying the whole room together.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to have thoughts on where to go from here. I just almost feel like I'm at the start of the draft, looking at these eight cards. Like, I really want to be red.
But you're clearly not going to be. Like, you can't. You're not going to be. If you were going to be red, you would have more red cards.
I guess. But, like, you don't want to put Incinerator or Guilty in your deck anyway? That's so good. I kind of want to try to get it in there anyway.
Of course you do. Yeah, I mean.
So I guess that's the first question I have for you. At this point, philosophically, are you. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Are you still attempting to put Incinerator the Guilty in your deck, or have you waved the white flag?
I've waved the white flag, I think. It's really because, like, one of my favorite questions during draft is, what is the scenario where this card makes my deck? And it's really hard for me to imagine I'm ending up in a deck I'm happy with, because at this point that deck would be what, green red splashing some stuff maybe, but like green red, the green cards I have don't really go, like, they're not beat downy. And so that's what I would want. I don't want to be in a green red control deck that's topping off with Incinerator, I don't think. I mean, it's not 0%, but it would have to happen. Like, I would have to open something really good in red, pack two, and red would have to flow. Pack two for me to feel like I could do it.
Right. That's what my answer to your question was going to be, is if red flows in pack two, that's the world where Incinerator makes our deck.
Yeah. But then like, even what I'm trying, what's the deck? Like, you know, like, and truly that's the question. Like, so red cards flow and then red what?
I've really liked Teemer. Like, the drafts I've done in the last week and a half have almost all been some flavor of Teemer. Like, green, red, splash, blue, green, blue, splash, red. And I just keep ending up there. I don't know if I'm biasing towards it subconsciously or what's going on there. But I could definitely see a world where your base green, red, splashing some good blue cards, like some of the collect evidence things.
Or satchel. Some repulsive
mutations. Yeah. But I think, so just overarching draft thoughts, which I guess is what we're trying to do here, right? Like, I would be much more willing to wave the white flag if our next seven picks past Incinerator were leading towards a cohesive deck. But I don't feel like they are currently. Do you know what I mean? So I think
I do. I'm feeling better about a green-black life.
I guess you're set up to, if you see, the thing that would make me check Incinerator off my list is getting a Roots or a Chalk Outline. Then I would be willing to wave the white flag.
Okay.
But until I lock in one of those enchantments down the road, my plan still would be to try to play base green red, I think, in the absence of more information here, just because of, like, Incinerator is miles better than every other card we have here. Plus, we have not a cohesive plan yet. I think you start to get a cohesive plan if we get Roots or Chalk Outline.
Yes, I agree. Right. But if we replace Crawl Whipcracker with Roots in this sequence,
then I'm willing
you're much more willing to be like, we're green black, easy. We scrap our first two picks, whatever, that happens sometimes. But yeah, I think that I'm just sort of already anticipating that because I don't have the experience with the Teemer life. And maybe I should be a little less willing to abandon Incinerator and just go, yeah, you're going to end up, it's going to be a weird deck, but you end up green, red, splash some stuff, and you're mid-rangey or more controlling, and you've got this incredible bomb. Or maybe you end up Jund, right? Green, red, splash your long goodbye, or maybe a way to reanimate, or, like, you know, macabre reconstruction to get back Incinerator. And yeah, maybe it's just more that, and I just should be more open to it. But my feeling was just like, well, past the first two picks, it feels like, you know, getting Bite Down on Crime 7th and V2Gazi Inspector 8th feels like something.
Yeah, I agree. I think getting the late Bite Down on Crime and the late V2Gazi Inspector tells me that green is open. Like, that makes me want to steer towards green as a base color, but then I think I also still want to make green red a thing with Incinerator. I think Incinerator is good enough that I would be trying to steer towards that still until I get a Chalk Outline or a Roots.
It just seems so hard. I mean, yeah, if it's open in pack two, sure, I should be open to it. Just seems so hard to imagine that being true. But well, it's possible.
I think it doesn't matter whether you're trying to do your thing and just wave the white flag from Incinerator, or I'm trying to do my thing where I still want to keep Incinerator as an option. The important thing is we have a plan, each of us.
Yes.
I feel like you and I often, if we draft together, or my brothers and I draft together on Wednesday nights sometimes, like, too many cooks in the kitchen, like, the first thing you need to do for yourself is just have a plan. Like, some people haven't taken that step. Like, you don't have enough of an inner monologue while you're drafting, most likely. Some of the people listening to this podcast, like, you just need to get your inner monologue talking to you about what the options are the whole time. But then also, like, you and I, or my brothers and I, like, get ourselves in trouble with too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, if you and I are drafting together in this draft, and we have these drastically different ideas of the draft, like, there's push-pull there, and that's not ideal.
Someone needs to take the reins. Like, you have to give someone, like, presidential power to make the final decision, you know?
Well, for sure, but I mean, but each of those plans is viable, like, assuming that you aggressively steer down the path that you're planning on, but you get yourself in trouble, like, sticking in the middle of those two options.
Right, or going, like, okay, well, so pack two, pick one will be on Ben's plan, but pack two, pick two will be on Ethan's plan, and then pack two, it's like, no, then you're just ruining the draft because you're not sticking with the plan. Like, you can't decide one pick to hold on to Incinerator and the next pick abandon it and the next pick hold on to it again. Like, I don't think you can do that.
You can, like, maybe once or twice. I'm the king of the waffle.
Yeah. I'm the great move of, like, well, and then you open up your sideboard and drag all the cards back in. You're like, okay, now let's see. I've got 30 seconds to decide how many picks I would lose if I went back this road. Yeah. And so I think the main thing is, because this looks, I mean, this is soupy. This is a like, it's not a clean start like our first scenario was. But I think you are going to be green. Like, you have to, I think it would be hard to imagine a world with the pick 7 bite down, the pick 8 V2 Ghazi Inspector, that you're not going to end up green as a base color at the end of this draft.
Yes, that is the overarching thought I have looking at these 8 picks for this scenario, is that I am green. I'm trying to figure the rest out. I think for me, priority number one would be green red, hoping to splash something to try to be able to still play Incinerator. Plan number two would be green black, some sort of chalk outline Insidious root stick.
And the real card that I feel like we're definitely waving the white flag on is Inside Source.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I have zero interest in being white. Looking at these 8 cards.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to scenario 2. You've got Neighborhood Guardian. It's 1 and a white unicorn, 2/2. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you give a creature +1/+1 until end of turn. There's Greenbelt Radical, 3 and a green for the 4/4 with Disguise for 5 GG. And whenever it's turned face up, your team gets +1/+1 and trample, +1/+1 counter, and then trample until the end of the turn. Pick 3, Tunnel Tipster, the 1 and a green 1/1 mana dork that grows when you play face down creatures. Pick 4, Nervous Gardener, which is the 1 and a green 2/2. You can flip up for a green to go search up a basic land. Pick 5, Escape Tunnel, the Evolving Wilds variant. Number 6, Crowd Control Warden, the Jonah Monitor himself. 3 green white for the 4/4, and it's got Disguise for 3 Selesnya Selesnya. 4/4 turns face up, gets +1/+1 counters equal to the number of other creatures you control. Pick 7, On the Job, the 2 white-white instant, give your team +2/+1 and investigate. And pick 8, a public thoroughfare. So another mana-fixing land there, although one you're generally hoping to not play, I think.
Yeah. As your drafts are just so much cleaner. The starts are just, it's just clean.
Well, these are minor hypothetical scenarios, baby. These aren't real drafts. This isn't the nitty gritty.
This is synthetic. This is fake. This one, yeah, it just feels like, you know, you're green. The thing about this that's interesting to me is, like, do I want to be green white? Like, is the answer yes?
I don't know. That's the question. I think that's the interesting question here, right? Like, so if you drop me in these 8 cards again, like, I feel 100% that I am green.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Once you take, like, Radical second, Tunnel Tips are third, when you get Nervous Gardener fourth there, then I'm just like, whatever, 95%. I could even say 100%. I'm going to be green at the end of this draft. It's really hard to imagine not being green.
Yes, I agree completely. But it's easy, I think, to imagine not being white. You took Neighborhood Guardian, and then the only other white card you really took is on the job pick 7, which is not remotely close to a signal.
And it's not remotely close to a signal, I don't think. And it's also, I think, not going to be at its best in green-white. Like, is green-white going wide?
You have to have the white cards. I mean, green-white's tagline from Wizards of the Coast is disguise, go wide, right?
Wake up, sheeple. It doesn't always have to be that. You know, if we open something really strong in white in pack 2, then yeah, I can lock it in. You know, if we open Wojek Investigator or whatever, pack 2, pick 1, great. I'm happy to go, we're green-white, let's move on.
So I think the more interesting question here is, to me, like, could you be green-white? Sure. Are you hoping to be green-white or not green-white? I think with this, I'm hoping to not be green-white. With the pack 1, Neighborhood Guardian, no other white until the on-the-job pick 7.
Mm-hmm.
And as much fixing as we have too, like, I want to be Salt Eye. I want to be Teemer. I want to be, like, a green X control deck. Now, the things we're missing here, like, going forward, things that are bumping up in the pick order for me are removal. Like, we've no ways to interact yet, right? Mm-hmm. Like, bumping up removal a lot. And then we're just looking for power. Like, no matter where the direction is. It's white, we'll go green-white, but we don't really have any good cards yet. I mean, like, Neighborhood Guardian's our best card, and I think, given the course of the draft so far, I think I am looking to abandon our best card to try to find other good cards that people are passing or that we open or whatever.
I think the other interesting list, or the short list to have in the back of your head for the start of pack 2, is what are the white cards that are gonna pull you back in? Like, if you got a second Neighborhood Guardian, pack 2, pick 1, then I'd be like, yes, this is my plan. We're doing it. Green, white, small creatures will go wide. So I think having understanding what cards are going to lock you in to white or pull you back into white in a very meaningful way is important also. But I agree. With the green start we have, with the Nervous Gardener escape tunnel, and even we could play Thoroughfare, even though I hope not to, like, we've got the ability to really play any powerful cards we see. So as long as that happens, which I think it does, thanks to play boosters, like, that feels like a much more likely scenario than the scenario of we get a second Neighborhood Guardian, we get a good white bomb, whatever, we want to lock that in.
Well, and so, like, here's the other thing, too. Just other considerations. And so this takes so much format knowledge, but if you're not thinking about these kinds of things, you should be. I think that is the point of this episode, just to give you a look into the kinds of things Ethan and I are thinking about at these points in the drafts. And hopefully you are, too, or hopefully these conversations spark some, oh, yeah, I should be thinking about that stuff more as I'm drafting, or whatever the case may be. But I think we have all this green fixing, right? Of the green color pairs you could be as a base color in a green splash deck, white is at the bottom of that list for me.
Correct.
Like, green white wants to be green white.
Yes.
Like, all of the other three, green blue, green black, green red, all those are great pairs for green X multicolored.
Yes.
So I think you're fixing a little bit in a sense of, if you do, like, let's say you do push back towards green white, I think you're trying to be green-white if you get that second Neighborhood Guardian. I'm not, like, really interested in splashing. Like, I want to draft green-white beatdown if I'm green-white. Which didn't seem like it was open in pack 1, which makes me a little nervous. You know what I mean?
Yes. And it also, like, it's not so much worse, but, like, Nervous Gardener is worse if you're not splashing. Like, it's sure, it's going to go find a land, and that's fine. And, like, that curve of Tunnel Tipster into Nervous Gardener flip up is so much more powerful when you're splashing around than when you're just the beatdown deck. Like, Radical is still going to be great. Radical is just great, period. And it will be great if you are a multicolored good stuff deck. If you're a green white beats deck, that's fine. But, like, the power level of Tipster, Gardener, Tunnel, I think, for my money, gets a little worse if you're not doing the Sultai soup.
Yes, for sure. I agree. But I think that's also where I want to head towards. Like, I want to head that way,
right,
rather than towards the Nervous Gardener the Neighborhood Guardian or the beatdown life.
Yeah. Well, I was more saying that, like, that's one of the reasons that I feel like I'm sort of going away from, because on the surface, you could look at these picks and go, Sick. We're green white.
Yes. Yes. That's the trap to avoid, I think. I think that is what some people would do, and I think you should not.
Yeah. And I'm not there yet. Like, I don't think it would, like I said, it wouldn't take much. Second Neighborhood Guardian, whatever, Case of the Gateway Express, like something that's just like tipping me over, pushing me towards, hey, this is another really strong white card. Doesn't take much at the start of Pack 2 to make me feel that way, but that's not where my inclination is.
So let's say you face Neighborhood Guardian, Pack 2, Pick 1, versus something like Ill-Timed Explosion. The 2 blue-green sorcery, draw 2 cards, discard 2 cards. When you do, it deals X damage to each creature, where X is the greatest mana value among cards discarded this way.
Two blue-red, not 2 blue-green, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's good. You found a good one. I think that's pretty close, honestly. I would personally take Ill-Timed Explosion because that's more the deck I want to draft. And I feel like it's going to use the green card. Like, we know green is open. It's going to use the green cards better. But I think it's very reasonable to take Guardian there and want to go green-white beats.
Yeah. I think I would also take Ill-Timed Explosion. But that's the kind of stuff some people would say, like, considering taking a blue-red card over Neighborhood Guardian when you have all these green and white cards, like, that's crazy. But I don't think it is when you dive into the type of deck your green cards are going to excel in. Like, because there's one thing I think this is maybe an overarching point here to hammer home that we keep coming back to, but not, we're kind of dancing around it a little bit. Like, there are cards that are good, right? Like, we talked about the Loxodon Eavesdropper versus the Seasoned Consultant, or, you know, we know Nervous Gardener is a good card, but why? Like, where is Nervous Gardener's best home? It's in a green deck that's ramping and splashing. So if we're straight green white, all of a sudden Nervous Gardener's value tanks, but we've already spent a fairly high pick on it, right? We picked it pack 1, pick 4, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So trying to put the cards, yes, they're good, but why are they good and how do you get them in their homes where they're going to excel the most?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. And I want to give some more weight to, like, one of the reasons I'm shying away from white this draft is it just wasn't open.
Right,
like,
yes.
So I'm giving more weight to the green cards and thinking about where they're going to be at their best, because that seems to be what the table is telling me I get to do this draft.
Yeah.
All right. I've got a nice, this is real, Ben. There's nothing fake about this scenario. This is real. Pack 1, pick 1, you get a Hunted Bone Brute. This is a 2 and a black 6/2 menace. You never cast it face up because you give your opponent 2/1/1s if you do. But as disguise, and when it dies, your opponent loses 3 life. Pick 2, just going for it. Insidious Roots, black, green, build around enchantment. Pick 3, V2 Ghazi Inspector. Pick 4, Runebrand Juggler, the black-red 2/2. When ETBs, you can suspect something, and you can pay 3 black-red to sacrifice a suspected creature and give a creature -5/-5 until end of turn. Pick 5, Deadly Complication, the black-red removal spell. Pick 6, Hedge Whisperer, the green 0/3, collect evidence 4 to turn a land into a 5/5. Pick 7, Clandestine Meddler, 2 and a black for a 3/2. When it ETBs, you can suspect something. And whenever you attack with a suspected creature, you surveil 1. And pick 8, Ben's favorite card, Repeat Offender, 1 and a black, 2/1. You can pay 2 and a black to suspect it. And then if it's suspected, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. A journey, a Jund journey here, my friend.
I was going to say the Jund special from Mr. Ethan Sachs.
That's right.
I think, looking at this draft, these 8 picks, my thoughts currently are that I am probably 100% to be black. Like, yeah. Certainly the late Meddler and the late Repeat Offender. Like, we're kind of directionless. I mean, not directionless, but we're in Jund.
So,
like,
rude. No. So rude to me. So do you hear what I have to put up with?
But I think once we get the Meddler into the Repeat Offender, I feel like, okay, great, I'm black. Like, it's very, very clear that we can't be white. Very clear that we can't be blue from the picks right we've made so far. I mean, short of opening some insane bomb. Like, if you open Aurelia's Vindicator or whatever, yeah, you're trying to put that in your deck somehow. But I think I would be locking in base black and then trying to feel out whether I wanted to be black-red or black-green. I think leaning towards black-red, like, we have the roots, but we don't have any of the things to, like, set up the roots. We have no Mavericks yet. We have no Gravestone Striders. Now, if some of those appear on the wheel and we snap them up, great. Like, yeah, maybe then I'm leaning back towards black green, but right now the black cards are aggressive, proactive, and our red cards support that much better in Deadly Complication and Runebrand Juggler than the green cards want to play a long controlling game, and our black cards don't want to do that. And if we're thinking we are black, how are we going to make those cards excel? I think it's pairing them with the red cards we have so far.
That's why I found, like, that's why I wanted to talk about the scenarios, and you really talked about all of my thoughts quite clearly, which is that, like, my inclination and the cards I want to give way to are, you know, Insidious Roots and Hedge Whisperer. But when I, like, sort of zoom out and look at the black cards, especially the late ones we got, like the Clandestine Meddler 7th, the Repeat Offender 8th, like, sure, can you play Repeat Offender in black green? Yeah, it's a fine filler 2-drop, whatever. If you need twos, you can play it. But, like, it's not going to be good there. But it will be actively good in black red, right? Like, and even Hunted Bone Brute, is it going to be good in black green? For sure. It's just good. Like, it's just a good card. But it's going to be really good when a 6-2 menace that deals my opponent 3 is in line with my get them dead plan. And so the Runebrand Juggler and the Deadly Complication in the middle of the pack, even though we got the Hedge Whisperer, even though I got the Roots early and would like to do that, I just feel like these cards lean towards black red. So I would say I'm pretty close to locked on black red at this point. Like 80% of the time, like a high percentage of the time, I imagine. And I don't like to be locked on a 2-color pair in pack one, but I think it's important to be aware of when that's true. And this feels like one of those spots.
Yeah, I agree. And based on these picks, like, you might think red's not open, and maybe red isn't open, but black should be open enough. Like, that you'll
and
get
black
some red cards.
Is open.
And black red is open, right? So you'll get the black red gold cards. Maybe you won't get tons of red, but black, I think black's best home almost sometimes is black red. Like, in these types of drafts where you have to reluctantly go into black, like, black red's a pretty safe avenue to go down.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, you'll be able to snag, like, some whatever. Hopefully you'll get some removal from red, but you don't even need that because black has removal in droves. Like, you can be pretty happy with sparing red cards, like with taking red cards sparingly when you see them and still ending up with a good black red deck.
Yeah, I like it. All right, gonna go to scenario 4 now. This is a real draft. You'll be happy.
I am gonna be happy.
Authentic, the good stuff. So pack 1, pick 1, you have Shock, single red, deal 2. Pack 1, pick 2, you have Gleaming Geardrake, the blue-red 1-1 flyer. When it ETBs, you investigate, and whenever you sacrifice an artifact, it gets a +1/+1 counter. Pick 3, Reckless Detective, that's the one in a red 0-3 that whenever it attacks, you can rummage or sacrifice an artifact to draw a card, and then if you do, it gets +2/+0. Pick 4, Inside Source, 2 and a white for a 1-1. When it ETBs, you make a detective token, and you can pay 2 and a white to pump a detective at sorcery speed to give it +2/+0 in vigilance. Pick 5, you get a galvanize, 1 and a red for an instant, deal 3 damage to a creature. Pick 6, a red herring, 1 and a red for the 2/2 has to attack each turn if able, and you can pay 2 to sacrifice it to draw a card. Pick 7, Auspicious Arrival, 1 and a white for the combat trick, creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn, you investigate. And pick 8, Granite Witness. That's the 2 white blue for the 3/2 flying vigilance with disguise for Azorius Azorius. And or it gets flipped face up. You can tap or untap target creature.
I'm just trying to think of what the Ben Wernie insult is of, like, oh, this is a collection of magic cards. Like, it's just another good, clean start to a draft. I think the interesting thing for me about this is, so we know we're red. I think we're 100% to be red at this point. Basically, when you take Galvanize 5th, Herring 6th, after getting the Shock and the Reckless Detective early, I think you're just, like, locked for red. Red aggressive, an aggressive red deck, right? So not like, maybe you could end up red green beats, but, you know, probably that's off the table. Probably black is off the table unless something crazy happens in pack 2. Like, you're choosing between blue and white. And I think the interesting things here are, which are you more likely or more inclined to go down or be prepared for pack 2, right? Do you want to pair your red cards with blue? Blue, in theory, dried up, right? You took the Geardrake 2nd. We didn't take another blue card until Granite Witness pick 8, and that really can slot in to either red, white, or red, blue. So you're really open. Like, you don't have to make the decision. I personally would be leaning towards blue, red at the moment. Like, that would be where my mind is going into pack 2. I know I'm red. I'd like to figure out which of these 2 colors I'm going to pair it with. But I'm really hoping to see, like, another Drake or a Satchel, and not, like, hoping to see a Dog Walker personally, because, one, I think your Drake is nuts, and it's nuts with, like, you've got Red Herring already, you've got Reckless Detective already. Granite Witness is an artifact itself, so compare nicely there. And I don't think that the white cards are doing as much with, like, sure, Reckless Detective and Red Herring are going to be good no matter what. I think they're going to be at their best. Like, Detective is getting to sack a clue for free to pump your Gear Drake. Like, you're really cooking there.
Yeah, everything you're saying, I agree with. But I think this one's interesting because I think some people, and not that this is necessarily wrong, but what you're talking about, like, you've got options, right? We know we're red. You either have a choice to be red, white, or blue, red, most likely. Like, it's very unlikely that you're going to be another color other than one of those two the way this draft has gone. But I think it's easy to look at this and say, well, we got Gear Drake second, and we've seen no other blue cards. Like, we've gotten some white. Like, why would I not want to draft the best deck in the format from here? Like, great, I'm red, white. Let's put the blinders on. But if you look, all of your red cards complement Gear Drake much better than they complement Inside Source. So if you're looking to maximize your red cards, I think blue-red is the home for where you want to go. Like, I feel similarly to you in pack two, because you're gonna face choices, right? That's the hard part about when you delay the decision like this. So you're putting yourself in a spot where you get to reap the benefits of, yes, I've delayed the decision, I could be red, white, or blue, red. At some point, you're gonna face a choice between a blue card or a white card, and it's gonna be decision time. So you need to already be thinking about what your incentives are to go which way, like, where is the needle edging? And I think for me, like almost 70% I want to be blue or something like that. Like, certainly weighted towards blue, because, like, if you look at the red white cards, it's Shock, Reckless Detective, Galvanized, Red Herring, Auspicious Arrival, Inside Source. Like, that to me has the makings of the start of a highly mediocre red white deck. Like, is it going to be playable? It's sure, it's going to be fine, but if you can get into blue red, like, if you tell me your blue red deck has Gear Drake, Reckless Detective, Red Herring, Galvanized, Shock, like, that I'm excited about. Like, I'm excited about those five cards in blue red. I'm not so excited about the collection of red and white cards in red white.
Yeah. And that's not to say that, like, am I taking Novice Inspector? Am I taking Neighborhood Guardian? Am I taking Makeshift Binding? Like, actually, I'm actually not that excited about Makeshift Binding right now, because because you already have Shock and Galvanize, and, like, these aggressive decks don't need a ton of removal. And so if you you just don't need that.
Right. That's the other thing. Like, when you're trying to do, that's the other point I was going to make, is what's shifting in your pick order, and removal is going way down.
Right.
Like, because you've already got two pieces of interaction. Like, you maybe want one more, like, piece of catch-all style removal or something like that, plus an outcold if you're blue-red or whatever. But, I mean, in red-white, like, you can also easily get yourself in a spot in a red-white deck from here where you don't have enough threats. Or
right.
enough
you need to
good
be
threat-dense.
With this start, I want to be threat-dense. I want 16, 17 creatures or things that are creatures in my deck.
Right. And if the blue stuff, like, let's say we try to be red-blue, one of the things I've noticed about blue is, like, you get the artifact cards from blue-red, but there's not a lot of, like, individual blue cards that want to do the artifact stuff. So if we've already decided red is open and we're red, like, even if blue isn't open, hopefully red-blue is, and we can still get some of those artifact payoffs late.
Right, yeah. Are you really happy with playing a deduce in your blue-red deck? I'll tell you what, again, a card I love in these blue-red decks that you can get late, Benthic Criminologists. I love that body. Like, I'm always sad that it's not a detective because it can't trigger my Projector Inspector. But other than that, like, that 5-mana 4/5, just ETB, sack a clue, draw a card, like, whatever, turn your Sanitation Automaton into a card later in the game. Card's great.
Yeah, card's really good. I agree.
But yeah, you're right. Like, it's a similar thought as the previous scenario of, like, we don't need that much red to be open to be happy to be black red. We don't need that much blue in this scenario to be happy about drafting red blue. And again, like we said, I'm not avoiding the good white cards when we open them or get past them in pack two. I'll let that push the needle to whichever side it's supposed to go. But my inclination, and, like, this should be one of the things in that inner monologue, the questions of, like, okay, these are the paths open to me. What is the path I want to go down the most, right? You don't have to only, so that when you have the tough decisions, as Ben said, when you are facing the close picks, you've already made those tiebreakers in your head. You already know what you want to take in those difficult spots.
Right. And if we talk about shifting pick orders, like, for example, and I can't imagine the pack that this would be, but let's say we've got an early choice between Makeshift Binding and another Red Herring. Like, pack one, pick one, you're taking makeshift binding 100 out of 100 times. In this spot with these cards, I'm taking red herring, like, pretty easily.
Yes.
Over makeshift binding, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I makeshift binding has plummeted in my pick order with this start.
Oh, really?
No, with this start.
I was like, oh, that, wow, rest in peace, pour one out. I kind of still like makeshift binding. I looked so concerned. I just saw myself in the Zencastr recording.
No. With this start, like, I'm just like, I think I just want threats over it so badly. Like, am I going to, and important to note that, like, if we end up in red white, I probably want one makeshift binding in my deck. And then that's it for interaction. I'm good with shock, galvanize, binding. We have auspicious arrival already as a trick. Like, if we end up red white, I just want bodies after that.
Right. So, okay. So let's say we push down the red white route. You're taking cards like Seasoned Consultant and Market Watch Phantom ahead of makeshift binding. Currently, with this collection of cards, yeah. Is that true? I think so. It's close.
I think I will take the first binding over. Like, if I know I'm white, let's say we open Neighborhood Guardian or Novice Inspector, and I feel like, all right, that's pushing the needle enough towards white now, and then I'm presented with that choice, I'll take the first binding. But
it's easier then, though, because you get another body. What if it's something like War Leader's Call that pushes you into red white, where it's another non-creature? Like, then you got to take a body over the binding, because
that makes War Leader, like, War Leader's Call is already like, but even, and or if it's, let's say it's Case of the Gateway Express.
Okay.
Then we're just bodies, right?
Like, right. Yeah. All right. This is good stuff. This is fun. I hope listeners enjoyed it.
Yeah. I hope so. Getting into the real nitty gritty. Well, it's just so like, I think we can endeavor. I'm inspired by Josh Lee Kwai and his like sort of mentioning of like, you know, limited podcasts. We do talk about pack one, pick one, pack one, pick two. Like, that's, it's important to talk about that stuff, but that's only such a small microcosm of everything that makes limited great. And sure, we can't do elaborate what's the plays. We can't do, okay, so these are the 20 cards going in my deck and you're choosing between of these eight, which three do you use to fill out your deck? Like, that's just not viable podcasting content. But right. The spots that we can do stuff like this, like where we can figure out how to make good podcasting content that isn't just about the first few picks, it's really invaluable because there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, love it. All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. Links to our tier lists, our merch, our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, all of that stuff can be found at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com or those JOK What's the Plays?
lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Get them in there.
That's what's up. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.